Hey, this is Punk News editor Ricky Frankel. You may remember a couple months ago, Adam White actually interviewed KJ Jensen from Chicks Dig It, and it kind of became and it was sort of like the first interview podcast. I think that was like maybe like October or something like that when their EP came out, and I really wanted in on that. So I thought I would eventually find someone to interview. This one is actually a fairly big name, and I'm very excited for this one because Rage Against the Machine was huge for me in high school. Musically, just listening to them and then playing their stuff on guitars was fantastic. I really enjoyed their stuff, and I still do. And they're still one of the craziest shows I've ever been to. this interview is with their bassist Tim Comerford, who's in he's fronting a new band called Walk Rat, and he's in Prophets of Rage as well, as you hear us talk about on the roundtable discussion from time to time. I had the chance to interview I was offered the chance to interview him for about the new Walk Rat album. It's self-titled, comes out on Earache. It came out on Earache Records, I think November 8th. We kind of go into it's the interview is separated into three parts. It's Walk Rat. Then we go talk about Prophets of Rage. Then I have a bunch. Then I nerd out about Rage Against the Machine stuff. Because I figure why not? He was really cool. The Walk Rat album is actually really interesting, especially if you want something a little more out there in the punk realm. Yeah, it goes long, and then it goes about. I think it's like a 45-minute interview minus the songs. Just a warning before. Around the 30-minute mark, there's a brief cutout that happened live. I don't know why, but he just sort of his side sort of just kind of echoes out for a second, and then it's brought back. I did the best I could editing it myself, but that's basically the only interruption. I think there's one other correction needed to make. I think I said that the incident where he interrupted Limp Bizkit's speech at the VMAs was 2001. I think it was 2000, but I know it's one of those 2 years, but I'm pretty sure it's 2000. After that, I just wanted to thank Adam White and Alvin Paul for letting me try this. I think this could be a cool little aspect to the Punk News podcast. John Tilly, I want to thank him too. Greg Simpson, as always, for producing everything we do on the Punk News podcast and putting up listening to our voices every week. And my younger brother, Andrew Frankel, who helped me edit this and put this together. So thank you guys. Before we get started on the actual interview, I wanted to get started and play a song. This song is called Sober Addiction by Walk Rat. It's on the new album, again, from Earache Records. Came out last month. Here it is, and enjoy the interview. Oh, sorry. One more thing. If you like these kind of interviews, I'm kind of interested in some feedback. So if you can email us at podcast@punknews.org, that'd be awesome. I think that's it. Here is Sober Addiction, and then my interview with Tim Comerford. Enjoy.
Words turn red to erase the grin.
Okay, so I am here with, they call him Timmy C. I've heard Y Tim K. Others, I mean, he has a lot of nicknames, but Tim Comerford from Walk Rat, Rage Against the Machine, Prophets of Rage, bassist for all those is here. Tim, thank you so much for being here, we all really appreciate it. So again, thank you.
Cool, right on, Ricky.
Sure. So let's get into we'll talk about some Walk Rat because the new album just the self-titled album just dropped from Earache Records last month,
yep.
I believe on Election Day. Let's just talk about just kind of the origins. I mean, how did it form? And it's an interesting name. How did the name come about?
Well, it was formed by the drummer Matthias, and that's his last name, Walk Rat. You know, he's a French guy, and he owns a restaurant here in Los Angeles. And Zach De La Rocha used to go there a lot, and he told me that Matthias was a mountain biker, and I love the mountain bike. I do it pretty much every day, and as does he. And we started riding together and talking about music, and one thing led to another. Next thing you know, he was asking me to play bass on these recordings that he did with Laurent Grandjean, who's another French guy who worked at Matthias's restaurant. And I was like skeptical, and I listened to it and thought it was amazing, and so I ended up playing bass on it. And then after I had played on a few songs, I took a stab at vocals, and here I am.
Yeah, well, so I mean, that's interesting because, I mean, for all the other projects that we you know, that fans know you from, you are backup vocals. What made you want to take lead?
It's not that I wanted to. I just wanted to hear the music with vocals, and we didn't have anyone else to do it, and so it was just sort of it just happened that way, you know? It was like, hey, I think I can do it, and it might sound good, it might sound bad, let's check it out. And I did it, and we all thought it was cool, and then I sort of never looked back continued to debate. The way we write music is they write the songs, they write the arrangements, and then I just play bass on it, and maybe we edit it a little bit, and then I do the vocals, and we edit it a little more, and then we learn it, and then we go back and re-record it once we've figured it all out and know how to play it. So for me, it was just a really nice surprise that I was able to actually play the bass lines and sing the parts at the same time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's you guys kind of identify as a political punk band, but when you listen to the record, it's a lot more than just four chords and yelling. I feel like it's a lot more abstract than your typical punk band, especially sonically. I mean, it seems to have like your like kind of signature like rolling bass lines that you kind of hear from all of your your projects. So I mean, where did your sonic influence kind of come from? Well, I mean, like, where did you draw from that influence to put into Walk Rat?
Well, I mean, the type of punk rock that I enjoy, I don't like what most people consider punk rock. I mean, I like the origins of punk. I love like the Sex Pistols and the Clash and like the you know, like I said, the original punk bands. And I'm not a big Ramones fan. I respect what they do, but I'm not. That sort of three-chord punk thing is not my bag, and I'm more inspired by the Bad Brains and Fugazi and Minor Threat and, you know, and some of the later, you know, the later punk bands that happened in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, and the whole hardcore scene is what I was really more inspired by. So that's the kind of punk that I like. And then I'm also a fan of jazz music and bebop jazz in particular, and that form of jazz back in the late 60s through the 70s was sort of like punk rock for jazz. You know, it was the type of jazz that didn't play by the rules, and it was the spirit of punk rock was within that music, and so I love that music, and as does Matthias. And so we sort of melded that style of punk rock with that style of jazz, and Laurent, the guitar player, he's very outside the box guitar. He doesn't really play a lot of your typical guitar chords and whatnot. And if he does, he has multiple amps and he gets different sounds and he blends those sounds together. And a lot of times he might be playing a power chord, but it doesn't sound anything like that, you know? And so that's sort of our secret, is that we play with time signatures sort of inspired by jazz music, and we play with anger inspired by punk rock, the kind of punk rock that I like. And we also mess with the sounds and sort of keep it, try to make it a little more electronic. And then my bass sound, as you said, is sort of, I have a thing that I do and it fits into this band, although I've modified my playing ever so slightly to be able to keep up with the tempo and do different things. So that's basically it.
Cool. Now, one of the songs on the record is called Generation Fucked. The lyrics spell out a lot of the issues, as does the music video. Yep. But I didn't hear any solutions offered, and I guess this is kind of more of a more philosophical take on it. I mean, what are the solutions for a generation that kind of goes through what you're spelling out as sort of a crisis in our case?
Take it to the streets, you know. Mm-hmm. Take it to the streets. I just as an example, the election in our country is a terrible thing what's happened, but the protests that took place afterward, to me, were an awesome thing. So, you know, this horrible situation that we might find ourselves in could potentially lead to something great and could lead to some great leadership if there's more of these protests. I've heard of a million-man march to D.C. and a few things upcoming that are going to be very exciting. Usually when there's that much organization around a demonstration, eventually there'll be some righteous leadership that will come up and sort of, you know, step up for those people. So that's basically it, you know. Take it to the streets. And you know, I'm definitely one that, you know, you see the news media commenting about, well, it's a nonviolent, these are nonviolent demonstrations, and I'm looking forward to when non becomes violent. that's where I'm at. Like, I can't wait for non to be violent.
Okay. The song Sober Addiction, that's also on the new record. That title's a bit of a, I guess some would call it an oxymoron. I mean, what's the lyrical story behind that?
Well, I mean, basically that song was a song about exactly that, like the things that I find myself, or we find ourselves, addicted to as citizens of the planet Earth, you know. And mm-hmm. one of those things is knee-jerk judgment of other people based on the color of their skin or their political views or their religious point of view or the clothes they wear or whatever. And that sentiment to me is what's running, what creates this horrible situation that we find ourselves in, where there's suicide bombers and there's bombers flying over countries dropping bombs, and there's suicide bombers killing people. And you know, there's just we're in a violent culture. We're in a generation that's fucked, and I really believe that it's a sober addiction to judgment and hatred that makes it all happen. That's what that song's all about.
Cool. So, I mean, I guess you kind of answered this question already, but if I want to know if you have anything else to add. Do the politics of Walk Rat differ from the politics of your other musical ventures
in some way? I mean, yeah, I mean, the cool thing about being a member of Rage Against the Machine or Prophets of Rage is that there's no rule book to your political point of view, you know. Like Tom Morello is much more political about the things he says, and he's super intelligent when it comes to his point of view. And I'm a lot more, and you know, Chuck D is more social. Like he's a more friendly voice of reason politically. That's at least the way I see it. And I feel like I have a lot more angry voice, and I tend to get angry when I see things, and I don't, and that's the kind of music I like, is angry music. And so, like I said, there's no rule book for being in rage or the prophets of rage, and that's a beautiful thing, is that you don't have to say what the other guy's saying or think the way the other guy's thinking. And Walk Rat is a completely different band, and it's a band that I sort of went into embracing that anger on the highest level, and just going, you know what, I'm going to make music that, the kind of music I want to make. I don't like love songs, and I like angry songs, and I'm going to make some super angry music, and that's Walk Rat.
Awesome. So now this is kind of an interesting, on the touring side, you guys toured with Prophets of Rage. I mean, I was pretty impressed that you guys were opening, because you had to pull double duty for both. Is that exhausting? Is that just like double the fun?
Double the fun, man. I mean, it's really, the two bands couldn't be any more different, and the way that I play my instrument in both bands is drastically different, believe it or not, and the way that I carry myself on the stage is, couldn't be any different. In the Prophets of Rage, I'm trying to feel the music and let myself go with my performance. And with Walk Rat, it's a much more focused, like, mental game. So they're different, and they didn't, I really don't think they step on each other. And you know, from an exhaustion standpoint, I actually felt like I was a better player when I got up there every night with either band, just because I was playing two sets. You know, I feel like I'm at an all time high with my playing right now, and with my understanding of music, and the pulse that I feel is moving quicker than it ever has. And I'm really psyched about it.
That's very cool. So, so why don't we move on to, some Prophets of Rage stuff? So, I mean, you guys put out an EP earlier, actually it was the later part of this year. But you guys did some hip hop covers. I'm just, from Public Enemy, I believe. Obviously you guys have some sort of, obviously you have background in doing this, but was it hard to translate hip hop songs that don't have, like, you know, bass, guitar, drum, into songs where those instruments actually are used?
Well, I mean, that's, if you listen to the Rage Renegades album, that's what we did. You know, that's basically what we did, is take hip hop music and rageify it, as Chuck puts it, you know, and that's a kind of a beautiful thing about hip hop, is that there's no constraint by the melody, you know, there's not a melody, so you're not constrained by it. You don't have to, like, create music that works with a melody. You can actually, I mean, if you want to just smash your hand on the strings of your instrument and just make a noise, as long as you're doing it with some rhythm, someone can probably rap over it. So it's really easy to take music that is already rap music that already exists and craft a whole new instrumental underneath it. And you can take, you know, we also take other songs that already exist, and we'll use, you know, like we were doing, I can't even remember now, but we were doing some Rage music and even some Audioslave music where Chuck was rapping Public Enemy songs over the top of it. So I feel really blessed to have been in Rage Against the Machine and to now be in the Prophets of Rage and be able to for a living make music make rock music blended with hip hop music because it almost feels too easy to me. You know, it always has felt that way since 1990 when Rage first started. It almost felt like it was too easy to write these songs, and here I am feeling that same inspiration. And once again, you know, and it's super fun, it's super easy, it's super quick, and it's as good as you want it to be, you know. And you know when you've created an arrangement that sounds great and there's no vocals on it, it's only going to sound better when Chuck D and B-Real are rapping on top of it, you know.
Yeah. So that brings me that brings me to my next question. Your other you know, bands have not had a DJ, but Prophets of Rage does. Do you find having a DJ more limiting, or is that when you're playing live, or because you can't, it's more, I think, is it more time constraining, or are you, is that something you guys are cool with?
Well, I'm totally cool with it. I mean, DJ Lord is a lot like DJ Premier from Gangstar, and they both have, they're real DJs, you know, they're right. Really on the wheels of steel, and they're really doing that stuff, and that's a lost art, I think, you know, especially within the context of music and like rock music. And I am, you know, we're still learning how to meld with that, you know. And that right now we're in the rehearsal room because we go back in the studio here in a couple months.
Or actually in a month to
make our next EP, which, you know, we're going to make a couple EPs a year from here on out, and that's exciting. And you know, like I said, we're still learning how to incorporate the DJ and work around the DJ and do that, because me and Brad and Tom are so used to creating like a certain type of wall of sound that we make, you know. And a lot of times there's not room for that, and so now we're sort of creating that room. And you know, I really like it. I think it adds like a freshness to what we do.
Now, okay, so you kind of answered this question that I was going to ask in a little bit, but I'll ask it now. Will the new material be, are you guys working on original stuff, or will it be?
Yeah, it's all original.
Oh, very cool.
All original.
Cool. Yeah.
It's not going to be like the last EP, and you know, I'm proud of the last EP, what we did, but we're going to blow that thing out of the water. That's where I'm at with it. You know, it's like, I'm excited to get better as a band. And that was the one thing, like I said, playing with Walkrat and then playing with the Prophets, like I got better as a bass player and on that tour. And we kept getting better and better as a band. And we're so much better right now than we were when we recorded that first EP. And we've gone in now and we've written a bunch of new songs. I think we have 11 or 12 new songs. And so we're going to pick the best from those. And like I said, blow that other EP out of the water. That's where I'm at with that, you know, and that's going to happen.
Very cool.
I'm excited for fans of the Prophets of Rage to be, you know, right now there's a lot of people that are like, is this a one-off thing, or are you guys going to do more stuff? Are you going to write more original songs, or are you going to just keep doing what we're doing? And it's like, we're going to keep getting better and better, and we're going to keep putting out more music to where eventually our fans aren't going to be asking those questions, and our fans are going to be saying, like, I can't wait for the next EP that's going to come out later this year, because they said they're going to put two EPs out a year, and that's what they're doing. So I can't wait. And like, ultimately what that's going to do for me as a member of Prophets of Rage is balance the scale. You know, I'm just trying to balance the scale between our catalog, which is vast, 35 years of rock and hip hop, and our new songs, which we only have one little EP with a couple of songs on it that are somewhat original, you know? So we have a lot of work to do, and I'm excited about that work, and I'm excited about the future of the Prophets.
Very cool. Well, I'm looking forward to that. So you guys played outside of a prison. Rolling Stone shot a video of it. I'm just curious, what was the reaction from the prison and the prisoners themselves?
Well, we didn't get to see the prisoners. We were supposed to be playing inside of the prison, and we had permits to do that. And then at the last minute, those permits got pulled by, you know, Sacramento, you know, up in the, you know, the capital of California here. You know, it's like they stopped us from doing it, and they thought that we were trying to create a riot, and we weren't. You know, we were actually just trying to, like, play music for prisoners, and that was our goal, and to bring some musical instruments for them, you know, to have after we left. And you know, when they said we couldn't play, the warden came out and spoke to us. It was a woman, and she was so bummed. She was, like, in tears, because she said,
really?
The prisoners were so excited, and she was so excited, and the guards were so excited, and everyone was so excited to take part and be a part of the show. And then at the last minute, it got pulled. And so what we did is we set up outside of the prison and played our set for, you know, from the outside. So the prisoners heard our music, but I didn't get to see their reaction and how they felt about it. But I'm sure it beats the hell out of not getting to hear that. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah,
I'm sure it's better than the alternative, for sure.
That's wow. Okay. That's nuts. I think it's pretty clear where Prophet's Rage stand on the election of Donald Trump, but I'm just curious, if would it have been any different if Hillary had actually won?
No, I mean, I really feel like that we have an archaic set system in play that's been there for a very long time, probably since Roosevelt. You know, we've had nothing but evil presidents that have come along and done horrible things and killed millions of people and just perpetuated a really fucked up system. And, you know, and so it wouldn't have mattered. Hillary would have just been another cog in that wheel. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to Donald Trump, who's just overtly racist and has rallied a contingent of voters that I'm not happy that they're voting, you know. But it's, you know, the one thing I'm going to say, and it's, like I said, if I look at our system, whether it be, you know, Truman or Obama, and they're Obama owes his soul to the banks that put him in office and the favors that he promised those banks at the expense of black folks and Latinos and poor white people in America. Mm-hmm. It's fucked up. Not to mention all the bombs he dropped. It's fucked up. And Truman owed his soul to the lobbyists who put him in as vice president, and ultimately he became president and killed millions, you know. And so it's a really messed up system, and I'm sort of hopeful that I know Donald Trump is not a good person, and I definitely don't support him, but I am somewhat excited about a change in the system, and maybe somebody else who will step up at some point and not be another cog in that wheel, and instead be a righteous leader, you know.
Interesting.
I'm intrigued, and I've never been more intrigued with politics and with the news in this world than I am right now. And I feel like that's a good thing from my perspective.
That's a really interesting take, actually. So in like live footage, and I think in an article at one point about Prophets of Rage, you guys collectively sort of said, like, if Zach wants to come join you guys at any time,
mm-hmm.
you guys are open to it. Which actually, as a longtime Rage Against the Machine fan, that actually made me feel good. Like, everything's cool between everyone. But if that were to happen, like, let's say he said, I know he's doing his solo, he put on a solo mm-hmm. hip hop album just now. But if that were to happen, what would that look like? Would that be like a three frontman thing? How would that look?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you, because that's not something that we've talked about happening. You know, if he wants to be a part of the Prophets, of course he can be, because whether he likes it or not, he is a part of it, you know? And, that's where I'm at with that. He's a friend of mine, and I've been friends with him since I've been a little kid, and I think he's the greatest frontman in the history of music. And so I you know, like I always give the same answer, and I'm just going to give it again. Like as a member, I'm a fan of Rage Against the Machine as much as I'm a member, and as a fan of Rage Against the Machine, I have my fingers crossed, and I'm very excited about the possibilities. You know, that's where I'm at. But we haven't gotten to a place where we're like, okay, let's plan it out if it happens. That's right. Not how we work. Okay. If it happens, then we'll cross that bridge.
Okay, cool. So let's move on to some Rage stuff, because I do have a lot of questions about I guess it was about almost 15 years about when you or at least a decade when you got from 92 to about 2001-2ish. Period of time. So I mean, when you guys were offered a contract from Epic and Sony, was that like a big discussion between you, amongst you guys, like, or was it like one of those, no, let's do this. This is a no-brainer. We should do this now.
Oh yeah. I mean, we didn't have a sort of an ideological point of view about, oh, this is a major label and they're bad and we can't be a part of that. We instead looked at it as this is a major company, Sony, and let's exploit them in the same way that they exploit people. Craft our set list accordingly, and we would try to give the people what they want and put the songs in the perfect spots and create like a set list that would destroy everyone else.
Oh God, that,
you know, and that's it.
That is awesome. That is so great. I love hearing that. So let's see here. So, I mean, kind of going off that, I mean, I think what's interesting, also, I think another interesting moment in Rage's history was the, was when, Limp Bizkit won the best music video that year, which was really dumb. Do you think that was like a new low for American pop culture? Because on one hand you have, you know, Sleep Now in the Fire, which has, whether you agree with it or not, it has a very profound political message, while Break Stuff has no message. And I'm just curious, like, you went on top of the set, but what went through your mind when that happened? Did you feel like the fix was in, or was it just like, this is ridiculous? Or was it just like, you know what, this is typical MTV?
Well, I just thought it was typical pop culture, typical red carpet culture, you know, and at the time, Limp Bizkit, they sold a lot more records than we did, you know, they did. But we had made a video with Michael Moore. And at that time, Michael Moore hadn't made Fahrenheit 9/11. He didn't have an Academy Award. He was not as much of a household name as he is right now. And we knew who he was, and we respected him for the movies that he had out at that time, Roger and Me and The Big One. And we wanted him to make a video, and he made that video. And yeah, that song, I love that song. It's not my favorite Rage song. Got to be honest with you. It's not, you know, but some people love it, and it's one of our biggest songs, but it's definitely my favorite Rage video. Mm-hmm. And I still will stand behind that as being, I'll go out on a limb right now, the greatest video ever made in the history of music, you know, because we shut down capitalism, as Michael Moore put it, when they rolled the metal doors down on Wall Street, and you know, and there was no trading happening for a little period of time there. So literally capitalism was shut down because of Rage Against the Machine, and it was all captured in a video. And that was what I was there for. I was there in support of Michael Moore, who made that video, and Fred Durst made the Limp Bizkit video, and there's, you know, he beat Michael Moore. Oy. And it still makes me want to gag when I think about it, you know? And so I was there for him, you know, yeah. And I was there for Michael Moore and for his daughter and his wife who were there with him, you know,
yeah.
And you know, and I was there for what that video stood for, you know, and nobody was gonna, like, I was at the Grammys the year before when Sean Colvin won an award and Old Dirty Bastard went up on stage and said, you know, hip-hop's for the kids or something like that, and he like stole the microphone. And at the next day when I was reading up on the Grammys, all I read about was Old Dirty Bastard. Mm-hmm. And I was like, in my mind at that point in time, I was like, if I need to do that, I know I can do that, and I will do that if I have to do that to make sure that people don't forget that Rage Against the Machine is the greatest rock band of all time, you know? So, like, I stole that opportunity right then and there, and it wouldn't have mattered whether it was Limp Bizkit or the Backstreet Boys, you know?
Right, right.
I would have done the same thing.
So, for you, that must be like, it sounds like it's a highlight of when you went on stage and disrupted the speech. It seemed like it was a huge moment.
At the time it was very uncomfortable, and I couldn't have felt any more uncomfortable doing what I was doing. I didn't want to have to do that, you know.
Yeah.
I felt obligated, and so once when I was doing it, it was terribly uncomfortable. But here I am, you know, 16 years later, and it's aged like wine.
Yeah.
And it's something that I'm very proud of, and I kick myself for not taking it further. I should have never come down. I should have come down with that whole structure. I should have destroyed that whole side of the stage. I could have, and I should have. And so, like, if anything, at the end of the day, I kick myself for not making more noise than I did, you know, and ultimately leaving my mark on that award show, which I really feel like after that it sort of went down the drain, you know. And
now just
here we are today, where it doesn't mean much anymore.
So just one more question about the video, that specific one. Everyone credits The Simpsons for predicting Trump's election, but you guys did in that video too. Whose idea was it to put that protester in there?
Michael Moore, you know, I gotta give credit to him, you know. It was his idea, but we loved it and we agreed to run with it, you know, but it's it was all him. He's a very insightful man, and he's got a, you know, when we played with the Prophets out in Detroit before Trump won, and everyone was so sure that Hillary was going to win, and here's Michael Moore, like, in our dressing room saying, like, I wouldn't be so sure of that. he was very cautiously, you know, telling us to be prepared for the possibility of Trump winning, you know, and I remember being like, oh, really? Nah, it's not going to happen. And, you know, here we are, you know. So Michael's, he's got his ear to the ground, you know. He can hear, he knows what's going on, you know, and that video was proof of that.
Interesting. Well, it's in some ways it must be like kind of vindicating to know at least, like, you guys were right at some point. At the same time, probably not for the right, but there are other reasons. It must be incredibly conflicting at some point.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of things that we were right about, that's for sure. You know, that's the reason why the music still resonates and still feels fresh today, 25 years later, you know. So it's, you know, it is what it is. It's like, that's what makes Rage great, is that we, like, you know, spoke about things that people weren't even thinking about at that time, and now here we are, and more people think about those things, and that's, I think, and I'm so proud that's why we still resonate.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a. I just want to make sure, let you know, we just have a few more questions, and then we'll wrap it up. So, in 2012, VP, Vice President candidate Paul Ryan, it came out that he was actually a fan of Rage Against the Machine, but later said that he disagreed with the political messages. Tom Morello wrote, I believe, an op-ed in Rolling Stone about it. But what were your thoughts when this sort of like little news item came out? And then as like a supplemental question to that, and I mean, when you hear like fans maybe don't disagree with everything that whatever band you're playing in, but you know, you're in are playing, but like have or whatever political messages are. I mean, if they disagree with something, is that what you're expecting? Is that what you're hoping for, or are you trying to educate and change minds, or do you just want to? Is it more about the discourse?
Well, first of all, Paul Ryan is, I mean, he's the perfect example of a certain contingent that listens to Rage Against the Machine, of people that just enjoy the music,
mm-hmm.
and either just don't pay attention to the lyrics, or just aren't smart enough to understand the lyrics, you know.
Okay.
So he, you know, there's those people, and there's also people out there that disagree with what we are saying, and that's part of being in a political. That's part of being of having an outspoken point of view, you know.
Right.
Artistically, there's going to be people that are going to disagree with that, and to me, and to I think to all of us in Rage, that's exciting, you know. That's exciting to go up against that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when Paul Ryan said he liked Rage Against the Machine, I was surprised, and I can't say that I was excited about that,
mm-hmm.
but I was surprised by it, and I was hopeful that he could potentially damage himself by saying it, you know. And I think, you know, I think he did, and I think that it was a ridiculous comment, and I just, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't. That's all I can say about that. But like I said, going against making people not like you based on what you have to say and challenging people politically that's exciting. That's fun. That's why we're here, you know?
Right.
It's no fun to conform. It's fun to go up against the system and try to break the mold, you know? And that's what we did. And that was our fuel.
Interesting.
Was that the hatred.
All right, so again,
believe me, we hated people too. We hated the people that hated us as much or more than they hated us, you know what I'm saying?
Right No, I get it. I think that's that, yeah, I totally get that. Now this is just because, you know what, and let me just kind of preface this. I was at LA Rising. It was in still the craziest show I'd ever been to. Now,
okay.
LA Rising was the festival where Rage Against the Machine, I guess, last played with Rise Against, El Gran Silencio, Immortal Technique, Muse. I mean, it was just one hell of a day. Now, that was back in 2011. Every once in a while, mm-hmm. we'll see on social media, like, oh, it's going to happen again. Like, I think there was some post about Dodger Stadium at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Is there hope for 2017 for LA Rising 2?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say there is.
Sweet.
I can't guarantee it, but I would say there's definitely a possibility that could happen. So that's something to look forward to.
Sweet. Oh, God, I will be there. Let me just see here. I'm not thrilled with the source, but just because it kind of makes me cringe. But I once saw a video of you. You guys, you got like harangued by TMZ at one point, I guess,
mm-hmm.
in downtown LA, where you talked about pulling out your teeth. Why?
Mm-hmm.
What was that about?
Well, that was just I ride my mountain bike every day, like I said, and I do a lot of. I have metal plates in my head from crushing my skull on my mountain bike, and I have a cadaver hamstring tendon in my shoulder that keeps my shoulder together, and I've got screws in my hand, and I got different things that are all mountain bike related. And
mm-hmm.
another thing that I get quite a bit of from mountain biking is busted teeth. And so sometimes my teeth get busted to a state of you know, where they need to come out, you know, and so I started instead of just having half a tooth in there, I just took a hammer and a chisel and knocked it out, you know, and
that is so brutal.
That's where I am today.
Oh my God.
That's where I am today. Teeth are overrated.
Oh my God. That is,
teeth are overrated. And the tooth that I have, the teeth that I have that aren't real are my favorite ones.
I think I have one more. There are two more. There was a brief period of time between the Rage Against the Machine reunion at Coachella in 2007 and LA Rising, where, you know, Tom was off doing, you know, Street Sweeper Social Club and the Night Watchman. Brad at one point was drumming for, I believe, Black Sabbath. Now my question is, what were you during those years? I mean, we didn't hear too much from you or Zach, and I'm just curious, what were you guys doing during those, like, you know, 4 or 5 years?
Well, I mean, I always play my instrument, and I get a lot of satisfaction out of just playing my instrument, and so I was definitely doing that, you know, as I was no different than when I first started playing bass, and I have a love of the instrument on the highest level, so I can, no amp required, you can just give me an electric bass and a couch, and I'll play for 5 years. And so I did a lot of that, and I can't really, I mean, I know Zach was musically active, even though maybe it didn't seem like he was. I mean, he too is a musician on the highest level and loves music and loves playing music and thinking about music. And so that's what we were doing. And then I also have a family, you know, that I have two sons and a wife who I love very much. And I sort of took that 5 years to invest into my family, and, you know, it's like a blessing to be able to be, to have a job that gives you that opportunity to take 5 years off and spend it with your family and then come back and nothing changes. I'm very lucky. I was very lucky during those 5 years to be able to do the things that I wanted to do. Being in a band, you know, playing music and, like, you know, whether it be Walk Rat or Rage or the Prophets of Rage or Audioslave, I've only been in a few bands in my life. Those are really the only bands that I've been in, you know, those are the only bands I've been in that have made records. And I don't take being in a band very lightly. I actually think, whether it's successful or whether it's not, if you're in a project that you really love, you're really lucky. You're really lucky. If you are in a band and you love it, you're a lucky person. And, you know, I wasn't that lucky during that five-year period. I didn't collaborate with anyone that I felt good enough about to want to make a band with. Although I did spend a lot of time during that time playing with Brad. Brad and I had a rehearsal room and we would jam all the time.
Sweet.
So, you know, like I said, I think that's a really good way of putting it, is like I wasn't lucky during that 5 year period to be in a project that made music.
Cool. All right. I do know that I know Zach did the One Day is a Lion EP at 1.2 during. I think it was around the same time. Last question. In your view, what do you think of the state of punk rock now?
You know, I really feel like punk rock is very that's a broad.
Yeah.
Form of music. I don't look at punk rock as a certain style of music. I look at punk rock more as an ethical of it's punk rock is an attitude, and if you look at it that way, then things are good. Whether it be hip hop music or, like I said, jazz music or old school punk rock or DC hardcore or Walk Rat. You know, I think punk rock is exciting, and I think any or Rage Against the Machine for that matter.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
I've always considered Rage Against the Machine a punk rock band, and sometimes people get mad when they hear me say that, but I'll keep saying it. And if they want to, you know, tell me I'm an idiot, then come tell me I'm an idiot to my face, and I'll knock your teeth out because I'm a punk rocker. You know, so it's
totally.
Like I'm excited about punk rock and whatever it may be, and I'm excited about people that want to break the rules and do things differently. You know, like for example, it's like I don't agree with everything that Kanye West says, mm-hmm. but I do think what he's doing is punk rock, and he's sort of. He's had my respect since the New Orleans, the flood in New Orleans, when he looked at the camera and said, George Bush hates black people. Like, I was like, wow, that is awesome. You know? And so again, punk rock to me is a very broad attitude that you know is alive and well in this world, and
yeah.
I look at those people that are out in the streets protesting. Those people are punk rockers, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
And, yeah, I love the state of punk rock right now.
Awesome. Tim, thank you so much for doing this. I don't want to keep you anymore, but let's. And I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know you're a busy guy. So I played Sober Addiction before we started. I'm wondering what song from the Walk Rat album do you want to play to get kind of lead us out?
Well, are you allowed to play songs that have swearing on them?
Absolutely.
Because every single one of our songs is loaded with swearing.
Nope.
But if you can play one.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite Walk Rat song is The Thing.
The Thing?
The Thing. Yep.
Okay, so here is...
Love that song.
All right, so Tim, again, thank you. This is The Thing by Walk Rat. The album is self-titled from Earache Records, and it's out now. So here it is.